my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the roundy road, many kinds I met there, many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on and on I go, the seconds tick, the time out, there's so much left to know when I'm on.
Welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org. Click on the Listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves. Your support keeps us on the air. For more information, go to kkrn.org and click on the donate button. That really helps to support our efforts here. And if you do it on a monthly basis, it's even better. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. You can also send me an email at unspun@kkrn.org. Today, our guest on the phone is Peter Phillips. Peter Phillips is a sociology professor at Sonoma State University in Northern California. He has published 15 editions of Censored, Media Democracy in Action from Seven Stories Press. In 2009, Peter Phillips received the Dallas Smythe Award from the Union for Democratic Communications. Dallas Smythe is a national award given to researchers and activists who, through their research and or production work, have made significant contributions to the study and practice of democratic communications. Peter Phillips writes op-ed pieces for independent media nationwide, having published in dozens of publications, newspapers, and websites, including Project Censored, Global Research, and Daily Censored. He is co-host with Mickey Huff on an hour-long weekly Project Censored radio show on Pacifica Radio, originating from out of KPFA in Berkeley, and it airs nationwide. He recently, if some listeners may remember, he was recently featured here on Unspun when he gave a talk on July 4th of this year to the Fellowship of Reconciliation's annual conference. The title of the speech is "The Transnational Corporate Class, U.S. NATO Empire, and Corporate Media Propaganda." I was fortunate enough to meet Peter in person here on our recent Ray McGovern tour in the North State, and Peter was instrumental in supporting the tour in his area with the help of many organizations in the Santa Rosa area and Sonoma State University. Peter Phillips, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Well, Doug, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you here.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you, and it was also such a pleasure to be with you and Ray McGovern this last week. We had a kind of a whirlwind tour, and you were part of that. And so I want to thank you also for your efforts there. You know, so many people were able to learn from Ray's experience and, of course, his vast knowledge of the world and the CIA and the intelligence community. So that was a great thing that you helped put on, and I was lucky enough to be a part of that, so thank you for that.
Ray's concerns about the national intelligence structure and the increasing power there and the ability to spy on all of us is very timely and very concerning.
Yes. I wanted to give people, because you put so much effort in the last, 15 years or so into Project Censored.
Right. I've been involved since 1997, and but Mickey Huff and Andy Roth are the directors now of the project, and have been for the last 4 years.
they do such great work, and maybe you can give our listeners a little idea of what they do there and who's involved and, you know, just the general purpose and how that serves us.
The project originated at Sonoma State University 38 years ago. It was under the directorship of Dr. Carl Jensen, who was the founder, who did that for 20 years, and I took over as director for 15 years. And Mickey Huff is director now, and Andy Roth is co-director, have been doing that and putting out the annual yearbooks. We have over 20 affiliate campuses, that is, other professors and universities all over the world, research independent news stories, post them on our website, and then every year we vote on the ones that we think are the most important. So out of hundreds, the top 25 that are in our current book, Censored 2015, which is just now hitting the bookstores, were all voted on by over 200 students and faculty from different universities all over.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a very democratic media network of your own.
Well, these are classes that, these are classes that primarily critical thinking, sociology, journalism, and the students' ethics. The students will research independent news stories, have them validated by a professor who's an expert in the field, and then do a summary of them. And those are posted on our website at projectcensored.org under Validated Independent News. And that's ongoing, so there's a constant posting of new stories. And so that's an alert to the corporate media to say, hey, maybe you missed this story. Sometimes those stories do get picked up, but most importantly, we end up picking the ones we think are the most serious and most important that have not had corporate media coverage.
I was browsing the last couple of days, since you were kind enough to give me a copy of the latest Censored 2015. I was browsing it, and there were several stories in there that I know that were not necessarily underreported, but what's the kind word? Propagandized, maybe, or spun.
There's two ideas of censorship. One is just simply ignoring a story and not covering it. And the other idea is that, the State Department or Homeland Security or important corporations will hire public relations firms to build a story that contradicts the main points of what's out there.
Yeah, we've seen this a lot recently. I usually have a running feed to my email from the New York Times. And I'm continually amazed at even the New York Times seems to have lost track of the facts or don't seem to care about giving a full picture of some of these stories. One of the ones, and you mentioned this in Censored 2015, one of the 25 that you list was entitled U.S. Media Hypocrisy in Covering Ukraine crisis. Most Americans think that there's this evil Vladimir Putin, and he's charging across the Ukrainian border, usurping the Crimea region and threatening everybody else in the region. And that's not really the real story, is it?
Not at all. The Russian military had bases in the Crimea already before any of this happened. And so they already had military bases there, and the Crimea is mostly Russian, which after the coup in Kiev that was sponsored by the West and encouraged by the West, it ended up having former fascist organizations involved in the government and, strong anti-communist organizations. The people in the Crimea voted 90% to secede from the Ukraine and go back with Russia, where they had been, part of Russia 50 years ago. So there was not an invasion. The Russians were already there. This idea that the Russians have invaded Ukraine is just an absolute fabrication. There's been no military units that have gone into the Ukraine organized by the Russian army. And most of the equipment that the rebels in the Ukraine acquired was equipment that belonged to the Ukrainian government. The tanks that they have and that were captured early on during the beginnings of the Civil War. It seems to be winding down. However, the propaganda that's been played here is that this was Putin and the bear reemerging in the world. This wasn't even terrorism. This was beyond terrorism. You couldn't really say Ukraine was a terrorist state. So they were saying that the Russians now were bringing back the Cold War. And it's not that the Cold War ever really ended in the context of U.S. military and NATO interests relative to the Soviet Union historically and then to Russia today. They still are occupying and trying to control regions around Russia with the ultimate goal of usurping Russia's power in the world. So the Russians know that, and they're not about to lose their naval bases in the Black Sea and or be bullied by expanding NATO into their border regions.
Yeah, I was comparing what's going on. My brother and my nephew were on Facebook the other night, and they were talking about, you know, the Russians are, they've got these bomber flights flying and doing all kinds of stuff. And I was just amazed at how misinformed they are. And then I pointed out that if what we're doing now in the Ukraine is comparable to what the Russians did in Cuba, there's very little difference. We're going to move our NATO partners and our most recent tactical, anti-ballistic and ballistic missiles right on their border. That's the intent. And, you know, can't we put the shoe on the other foot and understand exactly where they're coming from, that they have to do something?
Well, I think that's true. And the corporate media in the U.S., particularly the New York Times, kept talking about this invasion. And then there was this column of what they called military vehicles that were advancing into the rebel region. And these were 180 white trucks filled with medical supplies and food. And they danced from Russia. They drove into the separatist area. They had loaded their food and their medical supplies, and they turned around and left. That was not an invasion. It was simply, humanitarian aid, and this has clearly been proven. But any article you read about Ukraine in corporate media is saying, well, after the Russian invasion, blah, blah, blah. It just turns the whole thing upside down.
Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Professor Peter Phillips, educator, researcher, author, and activist. We're discussing the media's failure to inform us on important issues. If you'd like to call in and comment or have a question for Professor Phillips, you can call 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Well, not to dwell too long on the Ukraine, but do you have an opinion about how does this serve anyone to kind of crank up a new Cold War? Who profits from this?
Well, certainly the arms industry does, as which has really become one of the major industrial activities of the United States, building weapons, supplying them to the world, using. We just spent the other day, we spent 50 cruise missiles into Syria. Yeah, there's a $50 million spending in one day. So they're going to rebuild those cruise missiles. Corporations are going to get money to replenish the supply. This is major industry. It's incredibly profitable. Wars are very profitable. And the idea is to, the U.S. NATO empire is to protect transnational corporate profits and capital anywhere in the world where there's interference or resistance to U.S. NATO capitalist penetration. It's about money. And it's about control of the global economy. And NATO and the U.S. military, the police force, in service to American and European capitalists with trillions of dollars to invest that want to control the oil in the Middle East. They want to control the resources in the Ukraine. They ultimately want to control the resources around the entire world and subjugate the entire world to intensified neoliberal capitalism. So I say that with unreserved accuracy. I mean, I just really believe that.
I am more and more convinced every day of that. If you look at the countries we have attacked, most of them were not signatory to the WTO, didn't have massive trade agreements in place, didn't particularly embrace the petrodollar. So I think there's a lot of evidence to support what you're saying, and it's kind of the modus operandi, I think, is to create this enemy to democracy in our way of life, and then, of course, that's the excuse to attack those countries and put them under neoliberal control, whether that's through the IMF.
Or regimes that we put in place.
Yes, which then go to the IMF to indebt their country and leave with the money or siphon it off the top.
It's so obvious. I mean, there's patterns to this now where we can see if there's a strong leader in a country, that leader, but there's who's not cooperating with capitalist interests, that leader's going to be ostracized to begin with. There'll be negative press stories. Money will pour in from outside to support any resistance groups that are there, opposition parties, the media, various other kinds of campaigns. There will be marches and demonstrations. Any repression or resistance by the government in power is defined as a violation of human rights. And ultimately, it leads to people dying and deliberate interventions by the U.S. and NATO, both with money or military equipment to resistance or coups that happen. And I mean, we can see this in Libya, the attempts to make this happen in Syria, certainly in Venezuela, the Ukraine, going back to Afghanistan and Iraq. This is an ongoing process. I mean, it goes back to us supporting revolutionary resistance movements and new governments in Iran and Guatemala and El Salvador. There's a long history to this, and the patterns are quite clear. U.S. deep state intelligence operations undermine legitimate governments in the attempt to get them removed and intervene so that you get neoliberal, pro-capitalist governments in power.
Yeah, many times those governments are monarchies or dictatorships.
They're the best kind. They control everything.
Oh, yeah, they're easy. You only have a couple people to deal with. You don't have to try to convince the populace. Yeah, you just...
So we're bombing Syria right now, and the people with airplanes that are supporting us are all monarchies. The United Arab Emirates, the Saudis. Jordan, these are governments that support us, but they're not democratic governments.
Well, and some would even question if they're supporting us, if what? Most of the hijackers on 9/11 were Saudis and Yemeni. So are they really supporting us? It's so twisted.
Well, that's a long story.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly 9/11, the Saudis were involved, and to what level the government was involved. Certainly there was money that helped finance that operation that came from the Saudis.
Yeah, I think that's established. And, of course, Al-Qaeda is a product of the Saudis and the U.S. CIA operatives in Afghanistan. There's a long history there. It's really amazing. It's really amazing.
And ISIS as well. I mean, ISIS is the new Al-Qaeda. It's the new terrorist organization in the world that we created, that we helped build, that we gave money, resources, and training to, originally to undermine Assad in Syria. But some of the same people are involved that were part of Al-Qaeda, some of those people could go back to our involvement of using Al-Qaeda in the Balkans.
Yeah, and we could have more of that blowback like happened with Al-Qaeda. We set the stage for all of these things. We create the monster and then we cry, oh, be afraid. It's really phenomenal.
Theory. Mm-hmm. It's called chaos theory. When you're the dominant military power in the world, the greater the fighting that's happening in the regions that you want to do economic development in, Africa, you want to control the oil in the Middle East, the greater, the more fragmented and balkanized those countries are, the more militias and groups using U.S. weapons on both sides that are fighting each other, the unlikelihood that there'll be consolidated leadership that could in any way oppose U.S. interests.
We saw that in Iraq, too, with the Shock and Awe campaign. Part of that psychology is to destroy whatever values you have and reduce the level that you can actually negotiate or have any amount of power within your own country. That was part of the idea, the psychology behind Shock and Awe that we saw.
You destroy the infrastructure that in any way is supporting the government you want removed.
Yeah,
we certainly did that in Yugoslavia. We did that in Iraq. We did that in Libya. Varying degrees in Afghanistan. That you reduce the country to survival level.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, if you can't survive, you don't have much time to worry about democracy and everything else. You're pretty much at the mercy of those in power. And now we're seeing the backlash, of course. ISIL is the backlash of this kind of twisted, theory of, if you can call it foreign policy. I don't know. I guess it is our foreign policy in reality that these large corporations and private interests are driving everything in the world at this point.
Well, I think that's essentially true. And the greater, it's permanent war. And that's what's terrifying about this, is that we realize that. I mean, not only have we invaded 50-some countries since World War II, but we're in a perpetual state of war. And we currently have special forces, killing teams, on the ground in over 130 countries around the world. So anybody that resists, and any story, and we're always presented as the saviors, the good guys. That's how corporate media plays us out, and it's just not true. We've killed millions and millions of people. Vietnam being one major, Laos, Cambodia, Yugoslavia, Iraq, poisoning the world, leaving depleted radioactivity around in massive scales that causes great birth defects, which is one of our stories this year.
And one of those that's been suppressed, yeah.
Well, the Pentagon just simply treats depleted uranium if it's benign. Oh, that doesn't cause any problem. Massive increase in birth defects in Iraq, especially in Fallujah. Like one out of every four children that's born there now has a birth defect. It's horrendous.
Yeah, and as you say, it's really not covered by the media at all. That's another one of those forgotten results of what we're doing. But there is a flip side, and most Americans don't want to recognize this either, the flip side of that violence around the world that we support and generate is the domestic violence and the militarization of the police force. And in one of your chapters in Censored 2015 that you helped author is entitled Law Enforcement - Related Deaths in the U.S., Justified Homicides and Their Impact on Victims' Families. And in that, you talk about the militarization of the police, like we saw in Ferguson, and the effects on Americans. Maybe we can kind of just switch over and talk a little bit about that flip side of the violence overseas.
Well, there's tens of thousands of SWAT teams in the country operating in even small towns that are military-style command structures designed to really overpower any kind of resistance from citizens, whether they're doing anything illegal or not. And increasingly, these teams are used on what would historically have been normal searches and seizures, uprooting marijuana plants, that sort of thing. We have seen a complete, deliberate, top-down militarization of the American police in the United States, to the point that Homeland Security creates fusion centers, special informational networks of information are available to police departments. Literally, the cell phone you carry is a tracking device, monitoring civilian behavior 24/7. That's the capability now that we have on the ground, and our local police force can be involved. Now, this leads to large numbers of civilian deaths, particularly when people of color and young men. Currently, we're running around over 700 to 800 law enforcement-related deaths in the country annually. And this goes back, we did a study 15 years ago where we looked at the newspaper accounts of people who had died in a law enforcement-related death, most of the time shot. And we came up with 690. Our researcher, Karen Saar, was a legal researcher here and did a really great job on that. And so we've been monitoring this for the last 15 years. It continues to be that high or higher. The FBI will say there were 350 police-related shootings. There were double that. And there is no good, and that's actually one of our stories this year, there is no good information database on how many people are killed by the police, other than monitoring newspapers. So as we do that, we can continue to see not only are there 700 to 800 deaths annually, but they're almost always ruled justifiable, unless, like Oscar Grant, there's somebody filming the situation and it's clear he pulls out his weapon and shoots Oscar Grant in the back dead. There is never, literally never, any ruling by departments that these were unjustified. So all of these deaths are just accepted that police are correct. Plus, there's another 700 to 800 deaths inside local jails, city and county jails annually. And usually these people die within the first week. Now, that's 1,500 deaths. Now, it would be statistically impossible to believe that all of those deaths are justifiable. There had to be police mistakes. There had to be deliberate abuse, beatings, murders. Guy died. Tasing where the heart stops. I mean, that's ongoing. But there's a complete refusal by the corporate media and local police departments to really investigate this in a real way. So we actually went out and interviewed 14 families who had lost a loved one in the San Francisco Bay Area between 2000 and 2010. Now, all 14 of those families, and there were 15 deaths, actually, one family, they lost the father and a son. All of those families believed that their loved one shouldn't have died. The descriptions of what happened are from the family's perspective, are, you know, the police, this is interviewer number two, she said, the police and the media just said the officer felt threatened by my son and had to shoot him. Very few newspapers changed their story or apologized when they found out my son was shot in the back of the head. This is a young 19-year-old high school senior in Hayward, shot in the back of the head while running away from Bay Area Rapid Transit Police. No record of mental illness, no weapons present. So the 14 families we interviewed, four of those of their loved ones had died running away from the police, and they didn't have weapons. Many were mentally ill, who were off their meds in a state of hyper, being, you know, excited, and then they're confronted and surrounded by officers, which makes it even worse. So instead of backing down, trying to talk them down, trying to calm them, there's an assertion of authority, and they may charge with or without any weapons or anything, and they're shot dead. So there's some serious abuse going on, and people are dying in a very severe way constantly across the country. Ferguson is just one example, and there's many, many more every day in this country. So, but it's tied in to, you know, not only militarized police, but top-down homeland security controls and a command structure and sharing of information that sort of creates this we versus them police. I mean, there's really good, you know, observation and sociology around the idea that police see citizens as a threat. That the idea of community policing from the police perspective is lost. And we think it's very important that as citizens, we take a serious interest in electing police or sheriffs that will be supportive to community policing, that we have citizen review boards that can review situations. Now, you know, in some of these shootings, maybe, you know, the district attorneys aren't prosecuting the officers, but there's certainly a degree where an officer can say, "Well, I felt afraid," and that may be true. But nonetheless, someone died that shouldn't have. So there's a judgment here that is reinforced by police culture that you shoot and you shoot for body mass, and you shoot to kill. That is creates these situations, and if you don't, you're ostracized by the police, by your fellow officers.
Let me.
You're not considered a good street cop. We believe that this is a challenge by reasserting community power and police as a way of challenging global empire.
And let me just interrupt, and we'll come back to that thought. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Professor Peter Phillips, educator, researcher, author, and activist. We're discussing, among other things, the media's failure to inform us on important issues such as the militarization of the police in the United States. If you would like to call in with your questions and comments, you can call 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. 1-885. Your last thought there as a way to combat. How did you say that again? Maybe you could repeat that because I thought it was important.
People kind of become depressed when they think of the U.S. NATO empire of power, 1,000 bases worldwide. So we can march and say no to war, kind of thing. But it doesn't really stop it. It doesn't make any change. I think the real change that can be made and things that we can do locally is create community policing mechanisms, require our city councils and our sheriff's offices and that to have citizen review boards, to have a review process, to have a policy process that doesn't include automatically shooting people, to de-emphasize the militarization of police and build up the community relations aspects of this, to de-weaponize. That, you know, we don't need tanks and automatic weapons in every single situation to minimize that as much as possible. And there's an exaggeration that occurs in terms of the overall dangers. And a good example of that was in our area last weekend where the front page of the newspaper listed the regional gangs that were here, mostly Latino, Norteño and Sereno, and there was like 3,000 of them, and then there was these Crip gangs and Eritrean gangs and all, you know, white power gangs and motorcycle gangs. And, you know, it was like this army of thousands of armed, you know, hoodlums ready to invade neighborhoods. Therefore, you have to have this really solid, well-armed police department. It's simply not true. We studied this 3 years ago. We interviewed the gang task force. There's no more in terms of active gang members than a few dozen in Sonoma County. All these people have been identified as affiliates, friends of friends who might be. And that's what these gang task force are doing. And, you know, to say that these are organized criminal gangs in the thousands controlled by prison authorities, you know, by people in prison, is an absolute falsehood. But it justifies this continued militarization and increased policing power and monitoring of citizens in the area. So we have to stand up and say, no, wait a minute, you know, police work for us. Let's get them involved. Let's be friends with them. Let's make it as safe as possible for them. And I think it'll be safer for them if we're not fearful of them and they're not eyeballing us with weapons ready.
Yeah, that was the scary part there, watching the video from Ferguson. All those, and half those police officers look scared, but they have automatic weapons and flashbang grenades and you know, armored personnel carriers, and that's what makes it a scary situation and unhealthy for everybody. But we've been taught, and I think so much of the American public is fearful, and you know, they don't feel empowered. So let me ask: do you have any examples of good, like police review boards in your area? Because we don't have anything here in Shasta County that even resembles that. And if we did, well, we have, of course, the grand jury, but that's like a black hole of justice. Things go in there and never come out. So it's not very effective. But do you have something locally?
Yeah, grand juries are pretty much controlled by the district attorney. The city of San Jose has a pretty strong civilian review board that seems to be operating fairly well. They've had a tremendous, horrendous case down there where we interviewed the family of a young Mexican male who was driving around in a blue van. He had a mustache, and he fit the description of someone who would be hauling drugs. The DEA folks saw a Mexican with a mustache in a blue van and chased him. And he was afraid. He didn't know who they were. They were in civilian clothes. He got out and ran, and they shot him dead in the back. So that created a firestorm down in San Jose. But there's cities like Davis in Yolo County that hires an ombudsman. This is a person who works for the mayor, whose job it is to hear and interview and review and make recommendations and policies by citizens who were abused by the police or they think there was a problem. And that seems to have helped eliminate a lot of the tension between civilians and police. So ombudsman, citizen review boards, policies that emphasize, helping out in terms of people who are mentally ill, not confronting. There's a variety of things that could be done to lessen these 1,500 deaths annually that are going on in the country, and to bring police back into a personal friendship relationship with the people that they're in, there to support and protect.
This is something we've noticed also. I also serve on the ACLU board here locally and in San Francisco. And several times we've had to, not had to, but wanted to kind of create better relationships with the local police departments and sheriffs. And we've had meetings with them. But invariably, they bring the county council or the city council with them, and they're so defensive as to basically block anything that you might be able to do. They're very resistant to anything that might invade what I call their police culture. So it's a very difficult undertaking. I think we're going to try it again in light of all this new information. I think Shasta County is pretty well armed, and we have recent drug busts that, you know, a man at his home with his two children, or two young adults, I should say, children, and they're all swept up. 30 officers come down on them. They can't even look at the warrant. Officers won't even let them look at the warrant, that they use to invade their home. And they spread around enough trumped-up charges and, everything they can do legally to stack the deck against these people. And they really hadn't done anything illegal. They were just medical marijuana growers.
Exactly. I mean, the dangers associated with law enforcement work can be internally amplified by the police themselves. In other words, they're very fearful, and they will talk and that, and then so they build up a coercive authority that really separates them from the public. And there's a internal within the departments. There's a suspiciousness, an edge over the citizens. They have to display and maintain their authority. All of this serves to divide the police and the members of the community that they're supposedly there to serve and protect.
Yeah, this has been pretty much the result. And then you see the community. I sat in with about 30 medical marijuana advocates a couple of weeks ago, and some of them are talking resistance, armed resistance, because they don't see any justice. And all they see is victims. They're becoming victims, and they don't want to be victims. So now you have that escalation on both sides, which I would think local police would want to avoid. But, you know, if your answer to everything is just more force, then maybe you really don't want to avoid that. Maybe you want to escalate in return. Do you know what I mean? It's a kind of a crazy situation.
It ends up amplifying both sides, making them both afraid of each other, and creating the likelihood that future incidences are going to happen.
Yeah, I agree, and hopefully not. And hopefully we can put something in place locally. The ACLU wants to do that, and I think we can recruit members from the local community that are all for that too, because we've just seen like the Boston bombings and Ferguson, this excessive display of force against the citizenry, no matter how peaceful they are. It's scary all the way around, and hopefully we can do something here locally. Well, I wanted to spend some time on more time, go back to the media, unless there's a point you want to make here about law enforcement and this militarization.
No, I think we've hit it. I mean, it's something that any people, activists, people who want to see improvement in the world, one of the things we can do on a local basis is reacquire citizen policing at a local level, which puts the police departments back in support of the community and not under the structure of the national security state. I mean, I think that's really important for us to do.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good place to start, and it's important if we're going to have any kind of democratic control of our local neighborhoods. I mean, otherwise, what's going to happen? The Department of Homeland Security comes down with task force, and they set up a command center in your community, and now they're operating, collecting people off a watch list that did nothing more than attend a peace march back in 2003. So, yeah, the danger is certainly present, and it should concern everybody. But let's move on, because there was something that Ray McGovern said in his lecture series, and since I was with him on most of that, I heard him say it several times. He said, "The fourth estate is dead." And so I was going to ask you to kind of explain to our listening audience what that means and what that means for our future.
Well, what it means is that the corporate media no longer does investigative research, investigative journalism, in any areas that would challenge the State Department, the Pentagon, big corporations. There's a bit of that. There can always be a bit of it going on, focusing on individual kind of mistakes or corruption or something. But for the most part, corporate media has become a stenographer to the powerful. And literally, AP stories, stories coming from the New York Times, the Washington Post, reflect the public relations releases from the State Department and the Pentagon and the White House and big corporations, and they're literally run as if there's no other analysis of what's going on in the world. So you have a managed news system in the United States that is primarily propaganda. Fox TV, MSNBC, CNN, Fox, they can tell you the weather, they can tell you events that are happening, but when it comes down to fully understanding what's going on in Africa, Egypt, Syria, you're getting a very one-sided, very biased opinions and interpretations of what's, and in many cases, lies, just overt misinformation that is designed to create, you know, feelings and understandings in support of what we are doing, when in fact some of the things we're doing are just horrendously, violation of human rights worldwide.
Yeah, and the of course the effects of that is to keep the perpetual war going, which of course our forefathers warned us against. I think George Washington, that was one of his famous warnings, is, you know, avoid foreign entanglements and perpetual war, because those are known in history to destroy any democracy, and apparently that's what the powers that be, and we know that's not the average person anymore. Whoever those people that are directing our Congress and our executive branch and our judicial branch, that's what they want, and we seem to be disempowered at that level at all, and of course we're misinformed or propagandized.
Well, the idea that corporations are people, they can give all the money they want to political processes, meaning that literally anybody in Congress now to get there becomes dependent upon major corporate money. And there's a few, you know, people, progressives, that are in Congress, but very few. And so we can be providing the weapons and support to a country that's bombing civilians, as in Gaza, killing thousands and thousands of people, and Congress will vote to give them more.
Yeah, we have a caller on. I'm not sure they're fully linked up yet, but I saw the light flash here. Where the other thing that Ray McGovern brought up was, let me suggest that we, to our other callers, if you'd like to call in, you're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth telling. With us today, Professor Peter Phillips, educator, researcher, author, activist. So we're discussing his work at Project Censored and the future of our country and our media. So if you want to call in, call 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. We do have a caller. I'm going to bring this caller up on the air right now. Jimmy, you're on the air.
Hi, folks. Hey, I just got a quick question. What does the guest think about lapel cams for police officers they're talking about? And part B of the question is, what happened to the footage of the incident in Ferguson? Did that get released or what? And I'll just take my answer off the air.
Good question. Thanks, Jimmy.
I think lapel cameras are a great idea. And they should be automatically reviewed by citizen-based review boards. I don't know what happened in Ferguson, but we certainly know that from eyewitnesses that there was some officer abuse going on. And so for Jimmy, I think the answer is yes. Any kind of understanding of what police are doing that can be recorded and maintained, and then having access to that quickly. That actually goes to, you know, citizen review boards, so that there isn't an opportunity to cover it up or create additional information. That what tends to happen when a person is killed by police is that there's a circling of the wagons, and information is suppressed. New evidence can be brought in, weapons. We had a case in Oakland where a father and son were killed, and a shotgun was introduced in there as if they were armed, and it simply wasn't true. The family knew that there was no shotgun in the house, but then 6 years later, and they said the weapon was fired, and the police fired back and killed them both. 6 years later, they got the recording that an officer had of the incident, and there was no shotgun fired. And they were cooperating. The police actually made a mistake and killed themselves. There was fire from the outside that killed the officer inside. And so it was a really huge mistake, but they covered it up by introducing a weapon from the outside. So we need to be able to control those situations, have access to tapes and information, and to prevent that sort of thing from happening. I'm not saying police do that all the time, but it certainly can happen. It certainly has happened in various situations.
Yeah, and this brings up the citizen reporter concept, and Ray McGovern had talked about the new Fifth Estate, the Internet, and, of course, this is part of the work that you do. You work with young people and college professors and students, and you have a presence on the Internet. So do you think that the Internet-based for lack of a better word, people's media can never become as powerful as the corporate media and their effect?
Well, we are becoming increasingly more influential. Literally, two-thirds of the people in the country now don't trust the corporate media to give them the full story. And what we feature at the ProjectCensored.org site are links to independent news, review of independent stories that validate independent news, that we're an academic-based organization teaching students to do critical thinking. So, you know, we spend some serious time, thousands of hours, reviewing and validating these stories. And then many of our professors write articles that are published on our stories on our website. So we have a new featured story. Well, our law enforcement related death story is there, but then about wealth and poverty in the United States, about how there's a green Tea Party coalition fighting affordable housing across the country, and this is particularly about Marin up here. We just posted that story, and that was a part of our radio show yesterday. We have extensive research. So the site is any student, anybody interested in a topic can go to the projectcensored.org, type in the noun name of the topic, and you'll see all the different work we've done on that subject. We've got 38 years worth of data there.
Yeah, that's a pretty good resource in itself, considering it's all good data that you can bring forth to support for whatever it is you're trying to do within your community. That would be a good site, and I may go there along with some of the other ACLU board members and when we go to approach a local law enforcement. We've got about 3 minutes, and I always like to let our guests get their last words and thoughts in things that they really think listeners need to know and need to be involved in. And you'll hear a little music come up, and that's our cue to kind of sign off. So I'm going to just let you ramble, Peter, and we'll cut it off when we have to.
Well, Doug, it's really great to be on KKRN. I like to have my voice up there and talk to people. I mean, we really are faced with a truth emergency in the United States. The corporate media is a propaganda machine for the powerful. And if we begin to really think of it that way and to start to look for other sources of news and becoming our own news reporters, using the Internet, writing stories, sharing information, it's a very important thing. And then engaging in organizing our own friends to take a look at policing and what the powerful are doing and how it impacts our own neighborhoods and our own way of life is very important. Democracy is hard work, and we need to work at that. And in order to maintain our independence, our capabilities of making decisions about our own lives, I think that's the message that I would really like to leave with everybody here today.
Well, that's a great message, and the only thing I would add is to We have to all be courageous, and we need to, interesting word, encourage. We need to encourage each other, and I think you've done that here today on Unspun, and I want to thank you for that and all the other work you're doing, your radio show on KPFA, Project Censored Radio, and your websites. You've got Daily Censored, which is an ongoing forum and a blog-type format that has a tremendous amount of information on it and up-to-date and important things. So I want to thank you for all of that effort and work you put into your community and the great community you've built there around you. Really, I was really impressed by all the people that were involved in the organizations and the care and the effort that they put out to have Ray McGovern there. So I want to thank you for that again.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Doug.
All right.
Glad to do it.
Let me just inform our listeners one more time. You've been listening to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. Our guest has been Professor Peter Phillips, sociology professor at Sonoma State University, co-host of Project Censored radio show out of KPFA in Berkeley. He's an author and producer in Censored 2015, the latest version of Project Censored's publication they come out with on a yearly basis. Their websites include dailycensored.com and projectcensored.org and others, and I'll put them all up on the KKRN website along with the archives of this show. Once again, Peter, thank you very much for all you do, and thanks for being on Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling with us. You've got an ovation there.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug.
Thank
we'll
you.
We'll talk again. Okay.
Bye-bye. We will.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Professor Peter Phillips, and we were lucky to have him on the show. He's a great inspiration for us and all he has done in his life. So let him be an example for us all. And you hear our music in the background. That's time for us to go here. So next up on Peace Talks Radio, or is Peace Talks Radio on KKRN 88.5 FM. Thanks for listening.